VentureCast.
Does that make sense? So that's, I think my memory might not be from being 10. It's probably from being 35 or whatever how old I was.
So you're walking out on stage at the place.
Oh, the whole day. I'm just like shaking going, I can't get through this. You know, yeah. I can't get through this. And then Pat's super nice. I think he introduced me from Pittsburgh just to be mean.
Oh my God, that's great. The first time you met him.
50 years of music with 50-year-old white guys.
What's going on? Jeff
hey,
Simons.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Jeff Simons, who do you got with you?
Hi, actually, in studio. I never get to say that. In studio with me, in my backyard, is our Cleveland expert. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please welcome one of my oldest friends. We've known each other for almost 20 years.
Holy shit.
Started, is known locally as the guy behind so many guys in the Bay Area music scene, but you have probably seen him cavorting around the stage in Train, which is a little band. I think if they keep at it, they might actually do okay one of these days. But
we'll see.
Please welcome Jerry Becker to the Humble Pie. Right.
Thank you, guys. Wow, I'm going to write a book called "The Guy Behind the Guy."
It's a very bestseller.
That is definitely, when you're ready for me to ghostwrite your autobiography, we've got the title. We're all set. Behind the guy.
So you are our Cleveland, Ohio artist in residence. Cleveland is the fifth stop on our musical road trip. Do you know about the musical
road
trip?
Yes, I do. And my favorite city is Australia.
it's a little known city.
Nova Scotia.
Yeah, right. You're in that next.
Cleveland. I grew up there.
All right.
21 years, 22 years.
Your formative high school years in Cleveland.
Right. All the way, even art school. I went to school and college in Cleveland a little too.
Oh, awesome.
Until I couldn't afford it, but I definitely was there. Yeah.
You're definitely there. We can confirm that he was there. Excellent. So what we do is we have a because I don't know if you know this about our podcast, we don't always know things.
Just like the world.
Right.
Just like the internet.
But we try. We do our best. And so we've, in our research for Cleveland, we found out a few things. Mm-hmm. But it's good to have someone who knows, who's been there, who's had their ear to the ground.
And I'm 50, so I fit in.
Yes. Wow. Well, literally. Congratulations. And that was... You turned 50 this year?
In May, yeah.
Wow. I don't want to brag or anything, but I'm invited to a big fancy party to celebrate that birthday coming up very soon.
It was supposed to be in May, but I got food poisoning. So now it's 50 and a half. I had to go on tour this summer and now I'm back. Yes.
Okay. Very good. Yeah. Well, early on in the podcast, Jerry, we realized we were doing far too many health updates as 50-year-old men. Like,
my God.
Yeah,
right.
It's very quickly can devolve into pills and ointments.
Well, I'm pretty good. I take some heartburn and some asthma. I'm good. Luckily, I'm okay. Yeah.
All right. Well,
you can't see this at home, ladies and gentlemen, but the boy is fit. He keeps it tight. He's looking good.
After food poisoning, I think I was 124.
Oh God. Well, Cleveland, pretty good music scene. And we want to know what section of the city had the best music scene or any clubs that you went to that you remember.
Well, so I come from a big family. I have 8 brothers and sisters, and I'm the baby with my twin sister, Sarah. Okay. So my oldest brother and sister were like 15, 16 years older than me. Really, they benefited from Cleveland because they're the ones who, you know, listen to MMS when it started. MMS was our big radio station.
The Buzzard,
yes.
Okay.
I listened to it, but I was 10, 11, 12 when they were playing, you know, not even Bowie. They were still playing Bowie, but that's like the MTV, early MTV.
Right.
81, 82. That's when I started getting into MMS, you know. But my older brothers and sisters, because they went to these huge concerts that MMS put on at the municipal stadium, I benefited because they just played all the shit out of the stuff all over the house.
Yeah, right.
So I heard all the REO Speedwagons, all the Kiss, all the Bowies, lots of Beatles. But we also heard Michael Stanley Band, You know, the local favorites, where to me, I never knew Michael Stanley wasn't as big as Journey.
You just assumed
he was until you go to Chicago one day, you're like, who the hell is Michael Stanley, right? But man, that guy sold out Blossom twice. Blossom is their equivalent to our Shoreline, or where's home right now for you?
Asheville, North Carolina.
Asheville. So
we don't have
that. The Orange Peel.
Yeah, the Orange Peel. That's a small one. Yeah,
I know. But whatever your 20,000 seat amphitheater is, right?
Oh, the Thomas Wolfe Auditorium.
Yes. Okay.
There you go.
Thomas Wolfe. So
imagine Michael Stanley Band sells that out two nights in a row. Like no one does that, right? So they were so big in Cleveland. And anyways. Yes, MMS for me was the conduit that was Cleveland rock and roll. If you do any research on it, that's what it,
And this was a radio station that would actually put on concerts and have little mini festivals.
But not only that, they broke, you could read books about the Buzzard right now. I got a book sent to me in the mail from our manager because he's a big music guy. He loves the history of popular music and rock.
Oh. So where did he grow up? Just for future
Berkeley. Reference.
All right.
You went to school at Berkeley High. Yeah.
All right.
But he definitely.
He's just fishing for future guests. That's so funny. He's like, Berkeley High.
We got that covered. We need Topeka. That's what we need.
No, he's the best. But he definitely, like, I had already knew most of the people from the book, anyways, because I listened to them, you know, on MMS. And one of those things was like, oh my God. But here's the thing. When I first worked for Train, tell me if I'm going to skip ahead too quick. But
no.
When I first met Pat in like 97. I used to work for the band before I played with the band. And then I ended up leaving and going back to college and getting engineering and working on records. But at the time I was 1996, 97, I toured with them as a tour manager and it was a nightmare, but it was really great because I got to work for Columbia Records and Bill Graham Management and all these people. They introduced me to this guy one show. They go, Jerry, come on, you're from Cleveland, right? And I'm like, yeah. They go, who's this? And I looked at his face, no idea who he is.
Uh-huh.
And then I go, he goes, say something. He goes, and it was Kid Leo.
Oh, wow.
So Kid Leo works. He worked for Columbia Records when Train got signed and got their big, you know, shit was happening. Meet Virginia was doing really well. And there was the guy that I'd been listening to as a kid. And I'm like, holy shit. Because he moved from a radio station to a record label. You know?
Okay.
But it was pretty cool to meet him. And then he was part of our radio team for a year or two. I think he's still around.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. He is actually. He introduces Springsteen at the
The Agora
FM on 78.
That's right.
Ladies and gentlemen, Kid Leo from WMMS.
MMS broke for real. Like it's documented. Broke Springsteen basically, even though he's a New Jersey guy in Cleveland. Broke Rush.
Yep.
Broke Kiss.
Yep.
Broke Bowie. You know, this in the United States, this was
the radio station that started to play those bands before anybody else was.
Yeah. And listen to like Cameron Crowe talk about Cleveland. You remember they did it in Almost Famous. It's all about going to Cleveland. Like it's all happening.
Yeah.
It's all about that scene in the Agora. My brother, George, who Jeff knows very well.
Yeah.
George lives out here. He's the reason I moved out here. I had a brother. I didn't have to pay rent for the first few months.
That's exactly what I did. Yeah.
And he, huge music fan, taught me a ton, but also was at the Agora for that Hello It's Me concert with Todd Rundgren. And there's a guy in the crowd that looked just like Todd, and George and his friends lifted him up in the crowd. And then there's a scene in the video where Todd Rundgren's pointing up to the crowd smiling and he's like, that was me, I was in that video. I pushed the guy up in the air.
That's awesome.
All that stuff, it all was this, what a good place to be around music that was hopeful and great. But Cleveland, I mean, sorry to say this, but the reason they call it the Buzzard wasn't because of the Hinkley Buzzard Festival. It's because like the buzzards are flying around because the city's fucking dead, right? I'm pretty sure that's why they called it that, right?
They're circling
the carrion, whatever you call it, right? But still, I mean, you gotta love the town. It's like I had this shirt forever. It had all this black smoke coming out of it. It's a city skyline, black smoke, and it said, Cleveland, you got to be tough.
Because you're breathing.
It's a little bit like that. But I'm really glad I left. I love everybody there. I see people more than a few times a year. I go back. Sure. I don't have any hate towards the place. I just don't, there's no there's no real record labels there. There's no music. Yeah,
that,
there.
That
no,
seems kind of yeah,
it's
out,
hard. Yeah. There are great. I mean, look at Ohio. You got the Black Keys. You got Chrissy Hines. There are people that came from Nine Inch Nails. I used to.
Oh yeah.
What's his name?
Trent Reznor.
Trent worked at a, I think it was called Pi Music. It was a, they sold like MIDI cables and stuff. It was a keyboard store. He worked there.
Uh-huh.
And I remember the 80s band, like hair metal shit. We were playing in all these little clubs. The Agora wasn't the original Agora that it was. It ended up being another Agora.
Okay.
And we were playing there once with a hair band. And then in between bands one night, probably 1990, 89 maybe, this song came on. You know, in between the bands, and we all looked at each other because it was the heaviest sounding metal. Like it wasn't metal, but it was the heaviest sounding music we'd ever heard, and it was Head Like a Hole.
Head Like
I think.
A Hole, yeah, that was 89.
We looked at each other and go, "What is this?" And someone goes, "That's Trent from Pi Music," and we're like, "Not Trent, that's right?"
Amazing. That is but amazing. Anyways,
it's a good place to be from, but you know, he left too. People bail out of there. You know, yeah. It's good to be from Detroit. It's good to be from these places, but. There isn't a lot of support. You can't make a living there. You freaking work right. for a cleaning company. You got to do stuff in order to do what you're doing. Yeah.
Well, so circle back for me, the Michael Stanley Band. Was there, did they have a hit that had a national?
It went to MTV.
What was it? It was
called He Can't Love You.
Yeah.
And Kevin Raleigh was the keyboard player, and he was the one who actually sang the lead vocals.
Is that right?
No it way, really?
Yeah, it wasn't even
I
Michael.
I love that about bands like that, like the Jay Giles band.
That's exactly right. But Michael was the man. Kevin's so talented. I love his voice. But it is funny that that was their biggest hit. But that if you're from Cleveland, that was one of their hits, you know?
Okay.
I got to know Kevin through this. What's funny is that book, or not Kevin, I got to know Michael through this, that book that my manager got me. I looked up the guy's names on they wrote the book and I hit him up and I was like, is there any way? And there's a guy named Barry Gable from Cleveland who's the coolest Live Nation guy now, which would have been Belkin, I think, before.
Yeah.
You know how in you guys have seen it too. SFX, all these companies coming in, iHeart, they all buy up the venues and that like so before they used to be mom and pop kind of promoters.
Yeah.
So Belkin, Barry worked for them. Every time I still go to Cleveland, Barry takes care of me. But he got me in touch with Michael five years ago because, and I invited him out to every show because I was like, my family, you're our Bruce Springsteen, you know? And I thought it was so cool that I could get a cell phone. And I finally did. And I called him. We talked. He sent me records. We stayed in touch, but we never met in person. I invited him to tons of shows. He couldn't make it. So I never met him. One day I'm in LA in the airport.
No, come on.
And I saw him on the escalator and I was like, Michael? For real. And he goes, yeah. I go, it's Jerry Becker. I you know, and he goes, hey man, how you doing?
That's great. Like, that's the most normal thing in the world that you're in. Yeah.
I mean, it was it was wonderful to me.
That is so cool.
He did pass away last year. It was super sad. The city mourns it. Sorry to bring
so
that up. But
him,
I did
though.
Get to meet him. I did get he understood how important he was to us and to even my singer Pat loved Michael. Like we Donny Irish, I think Donny Irish was a Pennsylvania.
Pittsburgh.
Yeah. That kind of stuff.
Love is like a rock. You remember that song?
Love is like a rock.
Yeah.
And Aaliyah.
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, that sounds great.
So that was my house growing up, was Genesis coming out of one room, my sister Teresa playing piano, Scott Joplin all day, and then George up there with his Moog bass pedals playing Yes. And I just grew up in this house of music. And
so did every sibling have their own record player?
Good point. Probably only two or three. But that's a good point. There was none downstairs, but there were 11
of radios in every room.
There were a lot of radios. And well, we had the radios in the built into the house. You know, those ones.
Oh, the ones that get intercom.
Oh, sweet.
And then you can walk over and go, come down to dinner. You know,
it's the bomb.
You have
I
to with 11 people. Yeah. Otherwise, you just have to ring a cowbell.
It was, I lived in a hotel growing up. It was so funny. You know,
that's so great.
But yes, MMS is the cornerstone of. All right. Cleveland rock, if you're going to talk about it at all.
Now I was going to talk a little bit on the podcast about Alan Freed. Is that different?
It's
radio
before my time. Oh yes, or, way before my time. That's 50s and 58.
60s. But it's amazing the power of radio in the Cleveland area.
I mean, Yeah, it's almost like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, though, too. Like, you know, they put up the most money to have it built there. It wasn't that it deserved to be there. I think it did, but they also put up the most money.
I think it's great that it is. And it's not
I love it. I love a forgotten building
in another city.
Totally. And it's a cool place. I just went again. I go every time I'm in town.
Yeah, I just went to it with Will when we visited Dennis.
Did you see the Petty thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I loved it.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to go.
I'm all in. It's worth it. It got a lot better. I think they started in 94.
Was it bad? Was it bad in the early days? Or
not a lot of they stuff. Just didn't they have changing exhibits.
They didn't have the merchandise yet. They just didn't really have the stuff. Now they got Beatles stuff in there. Now they got John Mayer's letting them have guitars and stuff. Like it's pretty cool.
Have you gone to the Bob Dylan Center in Tulsa yet?
Oh man, I feel terrible. I was just there.
Oh, you missed it. Oh dear.
You know what I did though?
It's hard to get in.
You know what I did? That's right. Yeah. I did. I got invited that day to go to Leon Russell's studio.
Oh.
Called the Church.
Yeah.
And they had a guided tour. We did the whole thing. And the woman who took it back over now redid it the last couple of years.
That's where Petty recorded the first record, right?
That's right. So they gave the full tour and
with Shelter Records, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And she bought Daniel Lanois' B3 and Neve. So she got all this equipment there. Those were all the things that all the U2 records, all the Teatro and all the great, like it was kind of a great place to go.
Check out. Actually sounds better.
Yeah. it was a good afternoon. And those are the funny things. Like I didn't write Drops of Jupiter. You know, I like being a part of it. Yeah. I played every night, you know, like that's my thing. I've been able to have benefits like that from being in this band because the band's 25 years old, but I've been around for 15 of it or 14, you know what I'm saying? So it is an interesting thing where I get great perks like this where, hey, Train's coming into town. Would you like to come and see the studio? Of course I would.
Yeah,
of course
but I would. So, like Jerry's selling himself short. Like Jerry.
I am short.
Yeah, you know, that's true. He's actually one of the few people I stand next to and I'm like, you know, I'm doing all right. But no, like Jerry is just, like Jerry would somehow be offered a tour of the studio, even if he were just walking down the street. Like Jerry is just the guy you want to know, you know, that's why he's, I don't know. He's he never really leaves a band. Like when Jerry like upgrades the band. Like,
sure. Oh,
Jerry, you can come back anytime. Every time Jerry's home trying to rest, he's being wrangled to come sit in with about 40 different groups.
I love it's such a good scene here too. There's so many good, you know, musicians. Yeah. We've all made records together for over the years, so it's nice. Yeah.
I can't believe Train's been around for 25 years.
It might even be more. I think they started in 94, so closer to 27.
Yeah. I'll tangent later. No, I'm going to tell you no. I had dinner with Hillary Fonda Webb from Sweet Virginia yesterday.
She's
made a record.
Whoa.
And she just sent me the...
How's that?
It's pretty great.
Wow.
I might even help put it out.
Wow. What does Sweet Virginia have to do with Train?
Wait, so Train opened for Sweet Virginia.
Years ago. Yeah, back
when they were getting started.
There's a lot of Bay Area, like... You know, the Third Eye Blinds and all these local bands were all rehearsing at the same places. And, you know, I knew them, like I said, I knew them back then. And Steven would come in and him and Pat, like no one was really friends. They were all very, very competitive, you know.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
And in a good way, because that's kind of they did. They pushed each other. And there was a scene they were signing. It was a little after the Jellyfishes and the Counting Crows and that era. Like there was a few years after that, everyone's like, we got to get to San Francisco and sign some bands, right?
Okay.
And so it was kind of fun to, and then I clearly know that the band benefited from the boom of the .com era. This is 1990, 97, 98. There's young kids with tons of money and they were going out to clubs every night. Train would play Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And then go play in San Jose, and then go play in Tahoe, and then go play in the North Bay, and they never oversaturated.
Yeah,
that was everybody now. You got to put a show out 3 months later and try to get 250 people in a room. Guess what? Train had 250 to 300 people every night.
This is
after they built up. They did build up a following from a lot of acoustic shows over the years. So I'm not saying they had that out of the gate. I'm just saying when I got working with them, I couldn't believe the amount of people that were showing up.
That's amazing. I mean, I remember playing in bands that nobody remembers, but I played the Paradise Lounge on Wednesday night, first of four. There'd be 250 people there.
Right.
I was spoiled rotten.
Hey, we got to talk about Cleveland, guys.
Oh, right.
No.
I thought we were. Is that not where we're?
I'm sure Cleveland was the same way.
I'm just saying, here's my Cleveland real quick. I played in a band back there when I was out of high school called Liver Zoo, and it was a weird fusion horn. It was the people who quit playing in bands and everybody went to college, and then there were just a couple dudes left.
Right, right.
Who were like, I think I might want to really do this. Yeah. Or we just weren't smart enough to be in college, right? But I had some talent. I thought they were talented. We had talented guys. We worked our ass off. I would wake up at 8 in the morning and I'd go to my friend's house and we would rehearse from 8 to noon every day. Like, we wrote.
Awesome.
We were serious about music. And we never got signed. I mean, we tried. We did everything. We, you know, we made a record. We did some lots of shows. At one point, we were playing a club called The Fantasy. And I remember making like $600. Me.
Yeah.
Walking yeah. with $600 at 19 years old going, I'm good. You know, yeah. what else is there? I've made it. Right.
That is awesome.
And then I realized, oh, I guess it'll take a little more, you know.
You might need it on a continual basis. Well, let me ask.
Recordings get on Spotify. That is my question.
Oh, they're awful. But here's the best part. Guess who did our very first record? Tom Schick.
No way.
His first record was my first record.
No way.
Yeah.
You guys have known each other that long.
So Tom is a great friend from Ohio who I played in my first couple of bands with. He's a great guitar player. At the time we met him, he was just shredding guitar player. We needed a guy to play Tesla songs and Van Halen songs. Right?
And next I want to see if Tim reads the liner notes of his records.
Yeah. So then next thing you know, Tom, I knew he was going away to Berklee College of Music, but he was going for engineering. And I was like, okay, whatever. This guy's smart. He's going to do fine. He goes to Berklee in 91, I think. And then he started interning at Sear Sound in New York in 93 and finished. And then he runs the Wilco Loft right now. And he's made all those last couple of Wilco.
I do not.
Engineer for Wilco. Like, engineered by Tom Schick is on the back of all your favorite records.
Yeah.
Right. But I do not read the liner notes.
He did a lot of the great, all the Ryan Adams records, Norah Jones, you know, everybody. And he's just the sweetest dude. But what did I talk about, Tom? I forgot.
Because your first record.
Oh, anyways, when he was interning, there was another little studio in Ohio. And I remember I was like, dude, I don't know if we can pay you. I was one of those things, but we got enough songs. And he's like, let's do it. I'm interning at this place. I need some experience. Tom made the record. And I mean, it was so fun. When we locked out a place for 5 days and we both learned so much about it, you know, just like, that's how you got to do it, you know?
Well, I think you're teasing around the answer to this next question, but I'd love to hear you try and articulate it. But we ask everybody this: as far as your own journey as an artist and your thoughts on your artistry, like, has Cleveland or Cleveland's influence informed your career as an artist and your thinking when it comes to?
I think if anything, Cleveland has just changed me. Where, you know what I'm saying? Like, you can find people that are from back east. I'm not saying people born in California are bad or different, but I met Pat within 30 seconds of meeting him. I think I made the joke. He had a Pittsburgh Steelers hat on and I was like, hey man, Steelers suck. Yeah. And he looked at me like, what? This is a complete stranger, right?
Right.
And I said, I'm from Cleveland. And he just like shook his head, you know? And it's this Midwest, steel, you know, whatever you call it, like this dirty kind of funny. Everything's funny because everything sucks. You got to be mean, but funny. But
you got to be mean and funny.
You got to be in a van together and put up with it. I had five older brothers, and he had five older brothers. You know, and we were both the baby of a huge Irish Catholic family. We had mirrored lives. You know,
me too.
Is that right?
Yeah. Hey, you guys have the other half of this amulet.
But I'm saying that. The music, yes, because everything was song-based and MTV started, you know, I just remember being there, like, I was blown away by the Buggles and the whole thing, like, that whole, I was a part, we were one of the first people, we had cable, the first person on the block to have cable, and I ate that shit up.
I would say the other thing that I will answer for you is that, like, one of the things I really admire about Train is they want to put on a show that deeply entertains the audience. And that's a very Midwestern approach, right? Like a Train show is not like, you're lucky to be in the room with us. We are artists and we're going to gaze down at the floor Like Train is like checking in every three songs. You guys doing all right? Everybody having a good time? Yeah. You know, you guys need anything else? Like I can, when I go to a Train show, like I don't have to worry about whether the band is going to reach out and make a connection with me. It's the whole point. The whole point is like 8,000 of us. Let's be a thing. I go to see shows where the artist is indifferent to the presence of the audience. And that is just.
That's what I saw last week
in Cleveland. Like, oh, fancy boy.
Yeah.
Make an art. Art is short for Arthur.
Cleveland. The Joe Arthur?
Yes, right.
That's funny. There is 100% an entertainment. I mean, what the hell? How many bands have Strain played with or any of it? Like, from the 90s that are still able to keep doing it. There's a handful, right? Yeah. And the ones that still do it or the ones that don't anymore, maybe still take themselves a little serious. They think they're Radiohead or whatever it is. Like, we know who we are, but we enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's not like, I can't believe I have to play this song. Like, you know, Ben Folds, I fucking love Ben Folds. He really struggled with playing Brick when it was popular, you know?
Yeah.
He did not want to play it. Train toured with him and he was like, screw, oh, I bet you guys want to hear this song.
Yeah.
I'm not going to play it for you, you know? And guess what? I don't know if that's a great idea, but I think he plays it now. And I love Ben and Jim, our friend in town here, Jim, Bogis played with Ben. And I love, maybe he's just got a different career idea of success. But in my mind, I was like, man, these people, there are a lot of people that pay to hear that.
Well, also, is the performance for you or is the performance for you and them?
It is, you know.
It's for you and them.
And I know you guys like Dylan a lot more than I do. I like Dylan, but I think it's funny when he says stuff like, I shouldn't be remembered for my songwriting. I should be remembered for my performance.
Yeah, I know.
And I'm always like, I'm not sure, bro, but that's how he, did I read this?
I've seen him a couple times and I'm not sure I would say that. Wow.
I mean, it's the Emperor's New Clothes, man. People go and see him and they're like, you have to go see him. It's a whole different thing. No, it's not.
No.
Willie Nelson, I love Willie. I've seen him live a bunch too, where it feels like with Willie Nelson, the drummer, they've just slowly over the years taken away a different part of his drum set. Like now there's just like, it's just like a stool, a stick, and like half of a snare drum left. And I'm like, what's going
on? What's happening?
What's happening?
Oh, that's amazing.
I saw Augustana last week.
Oh gosh, I love those guys.
It was just the lead singer by himself because he has a new album of classical piano compositions. And so he played 45 minutes of his own classical compositions, which were beautiful. But he did not necessarily need me there. Then he went into, you know, a 50 minute set with some of the songs. And finally at the end,
oh, so he did do a couple of his songs.
He did. Yeah. Okay,
good.
But it was one of the most memorable concerts I've ever been to, in that it was so gosh darn strange.
I just saw Glenn Phillips a couple nights ago. I love Glenn. I've met him. I've known him for on and off for 15 years or so. Kind of the same thing. Have him on. No, meaning he didn't do classical, but he did luckily Train did a show with Toad the Wet Sprocket like recently.
Yeah, and that month was ago, right?
So fun because they played all the jams, right?
Oh, really? Okay.
Them. They played every song that I wanted to hear. I was like, oh, it's so fun. And then my wife is like, let's go. Glenn's playing, let's go. So we went to the show and I think he did like four Toad songs in like 90 minutes of his solo stuff. I have his solo records. I like them too, but for my wife and for, I really kind of wanted to hear a couple more.
Yeah.
But then again, he's an artist.
Yeah.
I'm not mad at him, but I also just know how, I don't know.
Yeah.
What do I say? You're going to have him on here. He's listening, isn't he?
No. Yeah, no. So, you know, sometimes when I teach The Great Gatsby, I just have them read silently. All right.
Yeah.
So, Jerry, we've got this last question for you.
Okay. God. I need more Cleveland talk and less Glenn talk. You can cut that out.
No, sorry.
Tim's in charge of editing.
So Glenn, love you. I love your songs. I love everything. I just want
to
keep reliving my childhood through you.
I'm going to let this little this little question lingers. You can really think about it. Previous guests have teared up. This is your moment. This is your Roy Firestone. What I want you to think about is the favorite musical memory you associate with Cleveland. So this could be when you're a little kid and your older siblings are excited about a song, or maybe you're a teenager and you're going to a concert, or maybe you're a young adult and you're performing yourself. You know, what is it? What is it that you really kind of cling to as a favorite musical memory from Cleveland?
Holy cow. I mean, this sounds, maybe it's me. It's, my wife will say, I can't believe you said that. So, to me, it might have been, the memory was something that I created that came from Cleveland. The past of me going and seeing all of my favorite bands play at Blossom growing up, and to actually go there and sell it. I think we sold it out. I don't know. And then have my parents and family there and 45 guests.
Oh, that's amazing.
That's something that I wouldn't have dreamed it would have happened.
Right.
Does that make sense? So I think my memory might not be from being 10. It's probably from being 35 or whatever, how old I was.
So you're walking out on stage at the place.
The whole day I'm just like shaking going, I can't get through this. You know, I can't get through this. And then Pat's super nice. I think he introduced me from Pittsburgh just to be mean.
Oh my God, that's great. The first time you met him.
Oh, and the best part about how funny he is we'll be in Pittsburgh and he would always go, ladies and gentlemen, all the way from Cleveland Brownstown, and then I get 15,000 people booing me. It's probably my favorite feeling to be booed on stage.
Pittsburgh, yeah.
There's a lot of shows with my friends and Battle of the Bands, all that stuff. I don't think anybody just comes out of nowhere. Not that I was able to get this success, but everything that I'm doing now that I did in my high school bands. You know, it's like I was already always working on the songs, trying to make them better, trying to take the band to a different place. I drove everybody crazy. I know they were like, he's a control freak. He's very needy about what he hears, but maybe it was perfectly for what I do here. You know,
right.
I'm not saying that everything's perfect, but I'm saying at least there's a level of professionalism that wasn't there in stuff that I didn't see growing up, you know, that I want, you know?
Yeah. That's really cool. That's a great answer.
That's a really good answer.
Sorry. Is this on?
Yes.
I have a question. While Jeff's on, you have a record out. How would you feel if I had a record out and my song was called Susie?
I have some questions.
Your wife's name is Emily?
Yes.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Look, I'm sorry, but you're out of town a lot.
Before it's we got kind off, of a, I had to throw that one out there. How would you feel about that?
A mean song about Emily. Emily's like,
oh, that's what I was saying.
How you know it's not about her?
She's quite bothersome. Yeah.
You know, Romo had the same question. Our friend Michael, also his wife, is also named Emily. He's like, he's on stage playing it with me. And I'm like,
well, this feels weird.
Exactly. That's he's like little... pointing to her. And I'm saying,
are you serious?
He was like, hey, Emily, all right. It was great.
That's
so listen, everyone, Jerry Becker is, you can tell the way he listens to music. This is, he was just trying to describe himself as a control freak. He's quite the opposite. Jerry holds... He's the glue that holds things together. He's the glue guy. He's the cynosure. He's the straw that stirs the drink.
Yeah.
If you haven't,
he's the guy behind the guy. Is what I...
exactly. Especially after we hang up.
No.
I'm
happy. Pat treats me very well. I'm so stoked that I get to be in a band with a guy who is one of those, like, you're not going to get voices like this in the last 30 years. You think about even like the hit songs of the last 25 years, song of the year, this guy's got two of them.
Right.
That's insane. No one sounds like him. You know, I don't care what song I'm writing with him or working on it. We put some chords together and put it on and it sounds like shit. And then he sings on it and it sounds like a freaking song. I'm not saying I'm the guy behind the guy. All I'm saying is we work off of each other very well. I love working 14-hour days if he asks me to. I don't have a problem with making him sound as good as he can sound.
Yeah. When
stuff coming up that I'm not allowed to talk about. Yeah. But when you listen to this 8 months from now, you'll be like, oh, that was what they were doing.
Oh, really? Okay, cool.
So that'll be great.
Okay.
There's a lot of work. Yeah.
We got to, Jeff, we got to hook up this this drive-by song that my son is talking about.
I'll send you the stems.
Yeah, there we go.
That was a fun one to work on. I got to tell you, it was just that we had come off of Soul Sister. It was such a high. We had toured the world 2 years. We couldn't believe we had, 5 million, whatever it was. It was so many records at that point sold. It's 10 million right now. Did you know that? We got a diamond record in the mail. I didn't even know what it was before I got one in the mail.
So cool.
There's only been like 60 diamond records in the history of
Brothers in Arms is one. I know because I saw a diamond record for sale in a thrift store.
I remember coming off the tail of that going, we got to go make another record. Well, why don't we put this single out while we're finishing the record? So we're down with Butch Walker in the studio, coolest guy in the world, greatest guitar player, sweetest. Right. We're in the studio. Drive-by's crushing on the radio already, and we're not even finished with the record. It was one of those, we can't do it. We can't do anything wrong. Look at this. It was one of those, like, it doesn't happen like that.
That is so sweet. Awesome.
Anyways, the work is good. Cleveland is everything, man. It's a big part. My parents are no longer with us, but it's hard for me to think about Cleveland without thinking about them. And
the whole family.
They got me my drum set when I was, they got me my Muppet set, and then they got me my first real drum set when I was probably 11.
Exactly. Your house is the hotel in the Muppets in Manhattan.
I was.
That's all what I think of as little Jerry Becker, like hanging from the balcony.
That's it. I was all Dr. about
Teeth playing in the lobby.
Bill Collins and drums. That's all I cared about. And then my first concert was 5150. I know it's Van Hagar. Don't get mad at me.
Oh no, this is your guy.
I love all the Van Halen records.
So you don't know this.
There's two different bands. Don't confuse them. Don't get mad about
sure.
it.
Sure. Yeah.
Brian Koppelman came on to talk about Van Halen.
Yeah.
He asked us all our favorite Van Halen records. Yeah. And Tim said 5150, and he hung up. He just left the podcast.
He said, all right, I gotta go.
It was hilarious. He didn't come back.
What a summer, though, man. I remember being in high school as like a freshman or junior or a sophomore. My friends all had it. My brothers got us tickets. We got beers. We went to the Coliseum, which isn't there anymore. It was the 51. Yeah, there's my memory.
Great. Right?
And then to meet Sammy later and hang out with him. And I got to do a bunch of stuff with Sammy and to tell him about that. He's like,
You know who I did that with? Was Colin Hay from Minute Work.
He's the best.
Saw him at Meriwether Post, and then we opened for him. I was like, hey, I saw you in 1983.
Him and his blue eyes?
Yeah. Oh, he's a beautiful guy.
One blew this way, one blew that way. Sorry. And on that note. No. Jerry's a terrible.
Right.
I love
all him. Right.
Hey, this was really fun. Sorry.
Thank you so much, Jerry. Really appreciate it.
Yeah. See you next time for sure.
And you want to hang up and then restart to have it as a separate.
Yeah. Let's do that. And I'll cut that. And you're slagging on.
You want to hang up and reset it as a. I'll just keep fucking up the ending. Do you want to hang up?
Thank you. This was fun. Right. I hope it was okay for you guys.
It was great. Thanks so much. Right. We'll see you.
All right.
I see.
Are you passionate about saving the planet for future generations? Do you want to learn how to do it? If yes, then you need to tune in to the Nature Backed podcast. It's a talk show covering the changing world around us, from renewable energy, sustainable agriculture, circular economy, to ESG and social innovation. Don't miss this opportunity to discover how you can join the movement and make a difference. Subscribe to the Nature Backed podcast today on your favorite platform and get ready to be amazed.
Have you ever wondered what actually happens in Congress every day? Stay informed on Capitol Hill's daily happenings with a concise, factual summary of the Senate and House of Representatives' activities from the previous session, free from bias, on the Congressional Record Daily Digest podcast. Subscribe on your favorite podcast platform and discover the process from the heart of U.S. politics. The Congressional Record Daily Digest, an Electricast production.
Electricast. Electricast.